Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. So this was a little bit of a daunting task because it's not really about the science of the paper. To my understanding, it's more about what attributes of the paper actually created the interest. And sort of my one take-home lesson is be in the right place at the right time. So it was a timely topic, and so some of its momentum is actually beyond anything that I actually did or my colleagues actually did. So this is the paper, and I would like to, of course, acknowledge my co-authors that span a wide range of disciplines. So there's Puthik Wadhwa does sort of fetal origins of adult disease and sort of how neuroendocrine dysregulations create attentional dysregulations in babies. So he was sort of the neuroendocrine guy in the team. There's epidemiologists, MFMs, and myself. So we had a multidisciplinary group, which I do think is quite important. So really, in sum, the paper showed that women who self-reported high levels of perceived stress or cognitive appraisal stress were also significantly more likely to have bacterial vaginosis in pregnancy compared to women that did not report the same degree of perceived stress, and that was adjustment for all sorts of covariates. So that's the point of the paper. So this is bacterial vaginosis status, which is a dysregulation in vaginal flora, and it's usually characterized as negative, intermediate, or positive. And you can see that there's a clear association and that it's a sort of a dose response, that the higher the perceived stress, the more likely that these women had bacterial vaginosis in pregnancy. That literally was the point of the paper. So why was this paper successful? I think that it's because the ultimate goal was to explain preterm birth, but not in this paper. I think it's a major public health problem. I think that's really important. There's clear implications for disparities. We integrated knowledge across multiple disciplines. We had a very complex conceptual model that had a biologically plausible mechanism, but we had a very, very simple research question. So, in review, everyone knows that the problem of preterm birth is extremely salient in this country. We haven't seen a big decrease. Much of preterm birth is idiopathic, clearly the leading cause of infant mortality and morbidity. There's a link to adult disease, even for the very slightly preterm infants these days, what people are now calling near-term infants or even early-term infants, all these new ideas. Basically, gestational age is a continuum, and being born before term, even by a week or two, seems to be associated with increased risk for adult disease, and there's a persistent race-ethnic disparity. So what was the integrating idea? Like I just said, preterm birth, it's couched in the sort of literature of preterm birth. It's a major public health problem. We also know that there's a huge race-ethnic component with non-Hispanic black women 2 to 3 times as likely to experience a preterm birth compared to non-Hispanic white women. We know that stress is also associated with a whole variety of health outcomes, but there's pretty good evidence that epidemiologically, women that experience stress are more likely to have a preterm birth compared to their non-stressed counterparts. We also know that non-Hispanic black women are more exposed to stressful conditions than non-Hispanic white women, and we know that racism is a unique stressor for non-Hispanic black women. We also know that there are measurable dysregulations, physiological dysregulations associated with stress. These are in the area of neuroendocrine disruptions, and the neuroendocrine system and the immune system are highly interrelated, culminating mostly in a pro-inflammatory state. So stress is not just immunosuppressive, which sort of everybody kind of knows because your grandmother said, you know, if you're stressed, you're going to get a cold. And then science has actually validated these things. But basically, it's also very pro-inflammatory. So the consequences of an infection are heightened in the context of stress. So there are, John Challis and many others have shown that there's a very plausible biological mechanism between the experience of stress and the likelihood of preterm birth. We also knew and know that infection is a major risk factor for preterm birth, with over 80% of preterm births at less than 32 weeks having evidence of infection in the placenta, subclinical chorioamnionitis, and that BV-associated organisms have been isolated from these placentas. And we know that non-Hispanic black women have 3 to 5 times the rate of BV compared to non-Hispanic white women. There's also a lot of information that area-level exposures or neighborhood-level effects influence or are associated with adverse health outcomes even after adjustment for individual-level attributes. So context matters, so neighborhood matters above and beyond individuals. And we know that non-Hispanic black women, even when we compare them to equally poor or rich non-Hispanic white women, come from very disadvantaged neighborhoods. So these were all the things we were considering in our group. This is a lot of information, but it's like, how do we put this all together to make what we considered a sort of a conceptual model, with the ultimate outcome being explaining preterm birth rates and the race-ethnic disparity in preterm birth. So I'm not going to obviously get into it, but for the paper in question here, we literally only were looking at a psychosocial factor, perceived or cognitive appraisal stress, and whether in our physiology area, our measure of this was just the presence or absence of bacterial vaginosis. So in this very big conceptual framework, we narrowed it down to an extremely simple research question, really, literally, does maternal stress have an association with the risk of bacterial vaginosis in pregnant women? But that's embedded in this very complicated, more comprehensive model. So what happened from this paper? So this was the funding that paid for this the project that from which the data came for that paper, and it was CDC funding, and the grant was called Preterm Birth Among Inner City Women: BV Stressors and Race, and the aim was to look at the association between stress and BV and look at race-ethnic differences in this relationship. This study turned out to be about 5,000 women strong, so the paper's written on 500-ish, but we kept this particular research agenda going to around 5,000 women included in this study. We used a bunch of the information that we obtained from that study to apply for other research funding, because we had this big conceptual model, this simple research question, and that is a really good recipe for getting other funding. So the next project we got added in, we measured a lot of immunologic parameters in vaginal secretions, and we actually then got money to obtain the clinical data from the antenatal records and the birth outcomes on a sub-cohort of that parent study. So around 2,000 women, we added, we looked at a lot of parameters in vaginal secretions, as well as BV, as well as the clinical data. So that enhanced our ability to look at our total conceptual model. Then we actually, in yet again a sub-cohort of that parent study, so these are all sharing a common cohort, we added very extensive biological parameters to these women, and we're not going to talk about these, but these are the biological parameters that we measured in a sub-cohort, and that was to answer the question, does stress neuroendocrine dysregulation, interaction with the immune system, increased risk of BV, increased likelihood of preterm birth. Then finally, we got an NIH-funded project to, again, follow women from this cohort. This was roughly about 2,000 women with serial assessments, until the infant reached 2 years of age, where we were looking at growth and development. So we sort of switched from birth outcomes to more growth and development. So basically, from that very simple, from a complex, comprehensive conceptual model, we narrowed down to an extremely important research question, and that translated into a real lot of research funding and many papers. So very quickly, integrate information across multiple disciplines, develop a very simple research question, even if it's couched in a very complicated conceptual model. Start with simple methodologies. The first study was cross-sectional. Then we moved to longitudinal observational studies. We've now done randomized clinical trials and add biological assessments whenever possible. Thank you.
So this is quite a medical topic, and you published in 2001 the Maternal Child Health Journal, which was quite a public health journal.
Yes.
Did you have any, how did reviewers react to your paper? Did you have to do any translation kind of into a broader public health audience?
Well, so the history of this exact paper is we submitted it to the New England Journal of Medicine, and it came back with, for the New England Journal, there's a lot of back and forth between the editor, unless it's just, not sent out to review. But so we had a good amount of, we were having some back and forth discussions, and then I actually, I think it was Milt Kotelchuk at the time, said, I'll take the paper exactly as it is and publish it in this journal, and we said, good. So we stopped that back and forth, and we went here. But this is really research that's grounded in disparities and health equity issues. So I see it as very public health oriented as opposed to biomedical. I mean, we are looking at the whole mechanism, and we would like to know the biological underpinnings, but we fully believe that these are upstream social inequities that generate these disparities. So that's the origin. Where? Which one?
The journal you actually published.
Maternal Child Health Journal. Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very good question. The question was, is how do we move to longitudinal from a cross-sectional study, from an IRB perspective, and how do you manage the complexities of timing? So we always, from the very beginning, have in our consent form, we ask everyone, if a project comes up, can we contact you again, right? So luckily, we've had that always in our group, in our research, so we were permitted. And the timing is very hard because it takes a while to get a grant, and the horses have left the barn, right? These women are in their pregnancy, and we wanted to institute multiple biological sample collections in gestation, first, second, third trimester, then at delivery, and then in the postpartum period. So we couldn't, obviously, thousands of women were no longer eligible. So when we say share a common cohort, that's true, but the assessments can't be on everyone. if you're actually rolling through a research agenda where you have to apply for more money. So in Pathways, which was the big biological grant, I think the N was something like 350. So you have the big sort of cross-sectional study, the smaller but still big, you know, longitudinal observational study, and then even smaller intensive biological sampling. And that's number one, money, right? You cannot do that degree of biological work on a huge cohort. You can't afford it. So you have to come up with research questions that work from a power perspective, et cetera, in smaller groups. So, and obviously many women were no longer eligible because they delivered. So start big, shrink down, add biology. There you Yes.
I heard correctly your paper was published in 2001.
Yes.
And I therefore suspect the work was done in the very late 90s into 2000.
Into 2006 was the last.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is now in 2014, if you had to do it all over.
Uh-huh. Very good question. Sort of the stars aligned in such a way, and the group was so diverse in terms of the experts that I had helping with this, that I truly wouldn't change much, except the acquisition of and abstraction of the medical records has been, well, was painstaking. So these women were recruited from Medicaid clinics from probably 10 different sites. I think I would probably have tried to institute almost in real time having the face-to-face. These were all face-to-face interviews. The women traveled with they looked like giant coffee mugs of liquid nitrogen because we snap froze the vaginal swabs that were done from that the first prenatal care visit, so posterior wall, vaginal fornix, break off the top, stick in a tube, snap freeze in liquid nitrogen. So they had a lot of equipment. I probably would have developed real time chart abstraction details where right after the visit they recorded important things, and I think parsimony is critical. So do not think that just because you're going to acquire a medical record that you're going to get, you know, 300 variables. Number one, you never use them. Never, ever use them. Think extremely carefully what clinical data you need and what you're going to adjust for or put in your models, and try to develop a way to potentially collect them in real time, because the electronic medical records stink for research, at least in my experience. So, awful. But that's a good question.
I wonder if we have about a minute left, maybe you could go back to the title slide and tell us a little bit about your author.
Oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, so Virginia Rao is a PsyD at Columbia University. She mostly is looking at environmental toxicant exposures on things like head circumference and developmental outcomes longitudinally. She's a very good epidemiologist, very careful, helped create some of our composite variables that we use for adjustment in certain models. Kelly was my master's trained, Hopkins trained, MPH, who did a lot of the basic statistics. Vijaya Hogan is an epidemiologist, worked at the Centers for Disease Control for a long time, very, very interested in health equity issues and health disparities. So her vantage point, her viewpoint is always about explaining the gap, not the overall factors that are associated with an outcome, but why the disparity, which are really different questions. Kathy Agnew is an obstetrician, maternal fetal medicine at Seattle. She's very interested in looking at things like IL-6 and vaginal secretions and an amniotic fluid and how this predicts whether people will go if they're in preterm labor, whether it will actually manifest in a delivery. So she looks at inflammatory markers in vaginal secretions and amniotic fluid in preterm birth. And Puthik is he's an MD, PhD at UC Irvine, really does a lot of work on corticotropin-releasing hormone, CRH, a primary major stress hormone in pregnancy, as well as developmental origins of adult disease kind of work.